Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by Old Fashioned Golf. Our friends at Old Fashioned Golf are creating Wisconsin-inspired golf apparel right in Green Bay, Wisconsin. All of their gear is extremely comfortable, with one-of-a-kind designs that allow you to show your love for this great state both on and off the golf course. And take it from me, Rob Hernandez, and Gary D'Amato, when we wear our old-fashioned golf polos on the golf course or out to dinner, no one has to ask us where we're from or where we like playing our golf. It's all about old-fashioned golf, all about Wisconsin at old-fashioned golf. So check them out at oldfashionedgolf.com. I'm excited about the read, Gary D'Amato, because I had a chance to talk to Kyle Herzog for something we're going to debut this week. It's a Wisconsin.Golf showcase. And, man, you know, you think you know a company by wearing their stuff and ordering and having it shipped to you. But, my goodness, I mean, the arc that Old Fashioned Golf has taken, to where they are today, it started out in COVID, as you know, Gary, with, you know, three guys playing golf at a course in Green Bay. Some guy walks into the bar with a Wisconsin logoed something, and they go, boy, that would look really cool if we could get a line of clothing like that. None of these guys had any apparel background, and here we are less than, you know, 4 years later, and we've got a whole line of old-fashioned golf products on oldfashionedgolf.com that really speak to every layer of golf and, you know, every layer of Wisconsin, you know, that you could think of.
Yeah, they make great stuff. I met those guys at the Milwaukee Golf Show, I think last year or 2 years ago, maybe. And they were just kind of getting started. And it's cool. It's cool, the products they make. I'm starting to see their stuff more and more as I play golf, Rob, and go around the state. You see some old-fashioned stuff on people now, and I've been wearing it a lot. And it's good, high-quality stuff, and it's made in Wisconsin, or the company's Wisconsin-based anyway, so that's great.
We kind of went through a lot of what they do in one of their designs they debuted for the Milwaukee Golf Show last year, and they're working on more. You know, the things that you don't realize are that, you know, we've talked often about the license plate and how they've taken the components of the license plate. They put it on a hat, which is really popular. They put it on shirts. They're coming out here for the holiday season, Gary, with a hoodie, an actual warm. And he was wearing it during our interview. And boy, it looked comfy, cozy as we start to, see the temperatures drop a little bit. That's going to be a big seller. And it's got, and he was wearing the one with the license plate components on it. And that license plate component is called the I-43 design, which I think is funny because, you know, what do you see when you're on I-43 these days? A lot of license plates, because usually you're stuck in traffic, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You see a lot of Illinois plates too, but I love seeing the Wisconsin plates, obviously. And you know, the hoodie, that it's a great time to come out with that as a product because more and more golf courses are relaxing their dress codes. And I'm starting to see hoodies, you know, in cold weather around here, I'm starting to see golfers on courses wearing hoodies. And so that's going to fit right in, I think.
Well, and we see a lot of that in the PGA Tour from time to time. And even in the, was there even one in the Ryder Cup? But, you know, if it gets cold, you gotta make do. And certainly, they've figured out a way. The other thing that, I was really interested to hear about was the number of special orders they're taking from high school and college teams. And, if you're, let's just say Gary D'Amato's alma mater, St. Francis High School. I'm not sure what the Mariner logo is, but you can have it just plastered like the state, you know, the state outline on a polo. And I anticipate you can also do some embroidery, but for sure you can have the logo on there. And he said, it's funny. One team wears it to a tournament. Three other coaches ask the coach, where did you get that? They get three calls. It's this word of mouth of old fashioned golf has been great. And then the other part, Gary, the reason that they're starting to get into the college market to a degree is because you've got, you know, kids who are playing on teams that in high school in Wisconsin that have these, these shirts, they'll bring in the college, they'll wear them. The coach will say, okay, where did you get that? You know, we got to get our logo on that. And then they'll go through the licensing stuff to put that on a polo for the college teams.
And so it's fascinating to see, you know, what they've been able to do with just a little bit of creativity.
Yeah, I can see that definitely both college and high school exploding, but especially high school in the state. How many boys and girls golf teams are there in Wisconsin, Rob?
Well, there's probably about 200 plus, I'd say 220 is my, you know, rough estimate for girls, and well in excess of 300 for boys, three divisions. And so there's a huge untapped market there. And, you know, and they order polos every year. And, you know, he said, you know, anyone can get the one that says St. Francis High School on the, or Wisconsin Rapids Lincoln on the left lapel. But, now you can get, some sort of identifying, logo unique to your high school. My high school had this unique giraffe-like statue outside of it. I mean, you could have put the giraffe on that thing and everyone would know you're from Rapids Lincoln. And you could put the outline of St. Francis High School in it. It looked like an old Kohl's building, you know, the Kohl's food store. I mean, you could do that. There's unlimited potential with what these guys can do at old fashioned golf.
Yeah. And you know, all those golf teams, you'll multiply it by, 10 or 15 players per team and then multiply that times 4 years because of the turnover. Yeah, you're right. There's a huge untapped market, and it's going to be cool to see what Wisconsin Old Fashioned can do with that.
And my son, who swiped the license plate hat for me that I've talked about, asked me to ask Kyle, is he going to get into other states? Because Devin thought that the Arizona license plate could, with a lot of its unique Grand Canyon state type of icons on it, would fit well on a shirt like that too. So. Right now they're sticking to the upper Midwest. My polo with the Great Lakes, is one that, they're quite proud of. And they feel that, they need to, again, start small and then go, then start branching out. In fact, Gary, the old fashioned, Wisconsin, I-43 hoodie is now on the website at oldfashionedgolf.com. So, you can go there, check it out. It's just $59. That's compared to the hoodies that I see in other locations. That's a pretty good deal. They also have crew neck shirts as well. So, go over there, take a look. And I didn't realize that the pullover that I have, is the with the Great Lakes on it. The Great Lakes is called the Freshwater. So that's all. They've got a name for everything that kind of encapsulates what I stumble over, which is why they do what we do, right, Gary?
Yeah, and they've been a great supporter of Talking.Golf and our website and Wisconsin golf in general. So it's cool to have them partnering with us.
And of course, headquartered in Green Bay, Wisconsin, it's great to have local people doing things for golfers here in our state. Well, as we get going here with Talking.Golf, we have had a bit of, actual competition type news that Gary compiled and put into Sweet Spot this week. Let's start first with qualifying school. Last week, Mick Smith, who's had a great year in the senior club professional ranks in Wisconsin and the Wisconsin PGA section, finished T10 at the PGA Tour First Stage Qualifying School down at Grand Bear Golf Course in club in Saucier, Mississippi. And he is off to the final stage here at the TPC Scottsdale. I believe they're playing the Champions course, not the Stadium course. But it'll be four rounds here in December. And Mick Smith, he's playing well enough, Gary, and he's kind of getting himself in position where whatever, competitive golf he played early in his career, I think those memories are starting to come back because he's playing quite well in those situations.
Yeah, he was one of the top ranked junior golfers in Australia when he was coming up through the ranks, Rob. He had a heck of a resume. He played a lot of high level golf in Australia, and then I don't know when he moved to Wisconsin. I'm gonna guess it was maybe seven or eight years ago, but since he turned 50, he's just been really the best one of the two or three best senior golfers in Wisconsin on the club professional side, and has had a remarkable year qualifying for the U.S. Senior Open and then, qualifying just last month to play in next year's Senior PGA Championship in Michigan, where Steve Stricker will be the defending champion. So, yeah, he's had a great year and tops it off by moving on to the final stage of PGA Tour Champions qualifying.
74, 73, 68, 72 were the scores for Mick Smith down in Mississippi. Michael Crowley of Fox Point, he's the head pro at Morningstar Golfers Club in Waukesha. He finished 19th, and Gary, the only real difference, I think, was he lacked the one low number that that Mick had. I think if he had turned a 72 into a 68, he would have moved on as well. The top 14 advanced, so he only missed by a couple shots. You know, at this point, you know, these guys have options. I mean, Mick Smith is a teaching professional and, you know, does, I'm sure, a lot of lessons. And he's worked out of different places, Washington County Golf Course, Nagawaki. And so he's got his fingerprints all over the Milwaukee market. And yet, as we've said, he can play. We'll see where it takes him. Now, he's already in one senior event next year because of his performance at the senior PGA Professional Championship. He finished T7 there, so he'll qualify for the 2024 KitchenAid Senior PGA Championship. This is a lot like Steve Stricker qualifying to play in the PGA Tour. You know, Mick Smith might actually get opportunities to play out there, and maybe if, you know, if he performs well enough at Q School that, you know, perhaps the AmFam Championship might even consider extending him an exemption to play on familiar fairways back in Wisconsin.
Yeah, hopefully he's gotten on the radar now with what he's done. It would be great to see him teed up at U Ridge, and then who knows, 2 years from now at TPC Wisconsin when the tournament moves there. But it's going to be tough when he gets to the final stage. That's a real grind, and not many guys make it onto the PGA Tour Champions. But hopefully, you know, he'll get there. And if not, like you said, he's performed well enough to catch the eye of some tournament sponsors, and he'll get in a few events next year if that's the route he wants to go.
Yeah, top five that's all that get exempt status for next year, and it's a complicated qualifying criteria. And we'll wait to see who all is there. You know, we were under the impression that Mario Tiziani, by getting to the second stage of the PGA Tour Champions Playoffs, was exempt for next year, and technically he is. But in talking to some of the media officials at the Schwab Cup Championship, it doesn't guarantee he'll get in every event. He'll get in most events on that status, but it was only the 32 or 30, you know, six golfers that made it to Phoenix that are actually guaranteed, you know, if their number gets called, they get to play. And so there's a good, you know, there is a chance Mario might be, you know, show up and try to improve his status by getting a top five at Q School. But anyone from six, I think it's to 30, are conditionally exempt. And then they go right into the Monday qualifiers if they choose to, A, spend the money to get to those, and B, the entry fee to play in them. It's quite a, you know, it's still a bit of a sacrifice, but at least you get to bypass pre-qualifying. And, you know, if you find some courses you think might fit your game, you can get in, you know, that way as well. But the Q School is a game, Gary, and I think our guys on the PGA Tour Q School side of things are finding that out quite a bit. You get to the second stage, and you're right there. You're on that doorstep at PGA Tour qualifying school of, you know, the final stage has opportunities for the PGA Tour, the Korn Ferry Tour, and PGA Tour Americas. Second stage really doesn't offer anything unless you win it and or, you know, finish in the top, you know, 15 to 20 and move on. And two of our guys, Harrison out of Brookfield and Appleton, Zach Burry, both came up a little bit short. Harrison was right in position, 70-69 after two rounds, but finished 73-75 and faded to T34 down in on the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail, and only the top 15 advanced there. In Savannah, Georgia, where Burry was, he went 71, 77, 75, 71, and finished T62, the top 17 advanced there. That's a final exam, Gary, of you know, really epic proportions because of how tough it is, and that's not even the final stage. So it shows you the kind of golf you have to play, and these are guys that were really at the top of their game coming out of the first stage.
Yeah, I think there's way more pressure on, you know, guys trying to get through Q School than there is on once you make it and you're on a tour, even making cuts, which can be very difficult when you're just starting out on the big tour. But that pressure at Q School, knowing that, you know, this is your one shot to get that coveted status for next year, It's tough. And Harrison had a great start, 70-69. I think he was tied for sixth place, after 36 holes, then had a little bit of a tough finish. But you know, we haven't, certainly haven't seen a lot of Harry. He's going to be on one of the tours. He'll probably be, you know, on the up in Canada playing again. And, you know, he's got time left. He's still a young man and he's going to get better. So we'll be seeing a lot more of him in the future, no doubt.
And while it hasn't been explained, I'm sure that second stage status does get you some sort of consideration in the Monday qualifiers for those, you know, satellite tours, the developmental tours, and hopefully he'll be able to take advantage of that. As Gary points out in Sweet Spot this morning, three more golfers with state ties are still in the second stage. They won't be playing that till next week once we get through the Thanksgiving holiday. Thomas Longbella of Chippewa Falls, the former Minnesota Gopher, will be in Valencia, California. And then former Marquette standout Hunter Eichhorn and former UW Green Bay standout George Kneiser will tee it up in Valdosta, Georgia. Again, you're not going to have more than, you know, 20 spots, you know, going on to the final stage. But you know, all three of those golfers have played quite well this year. George Kneiser exempt into the second stage of Q School by virtue of his finish on PGA Tour Canada this year. And Thomas Longbella just missed, but then got through the first stage, also played well over in the DP World Tour qualifying school. So he's ready to go. And Hunter Eichhorn's been living down in Tennessee and playing a lot of golf. So these guys should be ready, Gary. But again, I can't imagine the pressure just to get through. And I know, you know, when I covered the second stage when we were living in California, and, you know, Dan Woltman said, I mean, the second stage is everything because you get into the final stage. And not only do you get the status on one of these developmental tours, but you also get privileges at the TPC courses around the country to play in practice, which is a huge deal, especially now for these guys in Wisconsin with the TPC course there. But, you know, you really, you know, that's become kind of a restricted opportunity for these guys. And then there's also the financial part of it in terms of, you know, different entry fees for different statuses as well. So a lot to play for that we don't even know about. And that can only heighten the pressure.
Yeah, and all three of those guys, Longbella, Hunter, Eichhorn, and George Kneiser, they've all really played well the last couple of years. And I'm especially impressed, Rob, with George Kneiser, who I think has, you know, gotten better and better every year. He's really gotten to be, he's a force up in PGA Tour Canada. And, I'm just really impressed with where he's gone with his game. And it looks like he's on a really good upward track as those other two guys are too.
Well, I think it speaks, Gary, to the opportunity that he got up at UW Green Bay. And, you know, by his senior year, I think one of the breakthrough moments for George in his career was winning the Horizon League. And, yeah. And it's still the case. You win a conference championship, you get it individually, you get an automatic berth into the NCAA championship. So, you know, I know Lee Ranke told me this story about, going down to somewhere in Tennessee, Kentucky, and, for that, you know, NCAA regional. And I believe it was Michael Burson at the time at Wisconsin. You know, really, you know, helped, I think he had one or two guys there as well and really helped, guide, you know, George through that process. It probably was Jordan Hahn at the time, maybe. And so, you know, George, I think really flourished there and it just, and he caddied at Aaron Hills for many years. And, we all have heard stories about, you know, these, guys and gals that caddy at the various, destination clubs in Wisconsin that, really learn a lot by just talking people through the game. And I think it helps there too. But, so we've got a lot of Q school left to go. Gary, we finally had the first college golf rankings of the season, released last week. I don't even want to begin to try to tell you whose rankings they are and how they came to be. All I can tell you is that Mark Brody is now working for a website called Clipped, which has swooped in and they're sharing the mantle. The banner with Spike Mark, which failed miserably at trying to deliver results this past fall. The long story short is we have some of the most comprehensive rankings that I've seen since I started really paying attention to college golf. And it bodes well for a couple of schools, but and one of them is UW Eau Claire. The men up there ranked 16th in Division III. They had a 42-24 fall record. And records in college golf, Gary, as you know, are pretty tricky because that means they beat 42 teams in their invitationals. They finish behind 24 teams apparently they never tied a team after their 36 or 54 hole events. So that made it nice and clean. And so it looks all good. And part of the thing that made UW, Eau Claire, I think appeal to the formula is they play a pretty tough schedule against upper Midwest teams. Plus they go down to the Golf Week, fall event in Florida. Now I don't know. You saw what where the other schools came in, especially the Division I schools. I'm just not sure that it really takes it. I felt Marquette had a great fall and they're 73. Not that I felt they needed to be a top 25 team, but certainly I thought top 50. So from what I've read and from what Darren Skinner, the coach at Eau Claire, told me in a text, he likes the new method because Golf Stats rankings were very strength of schedule bias. So that meant once you got us, up in the rankings and scheduled other teams in the rankings, you almost insulated yourself from ever falling. And I didn't like that. And it was very difficult for schools in the upper Midwest to kind of crack that code. And, it's something that, the new rankings, I think universally among coaches, they're going to take a wait and see approach, but they really, hope that, that they're able to tweak a few things and make it better. Did you have a reaction to what you saw out of the rankings?
Well, my reaction, Rob, I guess when I read your piece, which went into the sweet spot this morning, is that, Mark Brody's the guy behind the shots gained metrics on the PGA Tour that have become sort of really an illuminator of why guys are good, what they do well, and why players, rise to the top, because of those metrics. You can read a lot of things into statistics, but Brody's statistics, I think, are really revealing about why players are good on the PGA Tour. So whatever his formula is, with Clipped here, and it probably takes a textbook to explain it, but I trust it, and I think it's going to just take a little bit of time maybe for things to work out and for sort of the field to level out to where it should be. So let's see where this goes in the spring after Marquette and Wisconsin are in the meat of their spring schedule on UW Green Bay and all the state schools, and see where this leads.
The Division II rankings only did it regionally, and one of Darren Skinner's comments to me was he really would like to see Division III go to a regional ranking, because right now they bring all the automatic qualifiers, all of them, to the national championships. The men have more conferences across the country than the women do, and some are good, some aren't. Last year in the women's side, St. Catharines of Minnesota got left off because there just weren't enough spots for the at-large, and so you've got a national championship where you've got some schools that can barely break 400, which is, in college golf, 300 is if you aren't breaking 300, you're way, way down in the rankings. So you can only imagine at that level, what that means if you're a St. Kate's and you've shot 287 and 297 and whatever during the course of the season, be sitting home. But a regional component would change that. And that's what they do in Division I, Division II, but it also adds an expense. You've got more schools traveling to the postseason in these, regional tournaments. And so if they can find a way to deal with that, I think they can get there. I much prefer a regional competition, even though, my daughter's experience was they won their conference twice. She played in the nationals twice. It was a great experience. And compared to Division I, Division II, much easier to get there when you have a good team that can win a conference. So there's two ways to look at that. And then you also have the individual component going here. Cameron Huss of Wisconsin, the top golfer in Division I among those with Wisconsin ties at 156. He had a great year. And you think about all the different, they've got PGA Tour University, which provides these playing opportunities both on the PGA Tour for the number one ranked golfer each year in that ranking. And then the Corn Ferry and the PGA Tour Americas. Cameron's kind of in that twilight of his career with the Badgers, and I'm sure he's a long way from getting into that mix. You would have thought at one point Pearson Hunt, but we talked about Pearson's really struggled this year, and now the rankings bear that out. Based on the metrics being used right now, he's at number 619. I was kind of surprised to see that, but, this only takes into account, Gary, college starts, and that, and much like any level of golf, the proof is in the performance. That's a tough pill to swallow when you see it in black and white.
It is. Yeah. And based on what I've seen of Pearson Hunt and watched him play and watched him win tournaments in our state, his talent level is really, really high. So, you know, to think that there are 618 players in college ranked ahead of him, it's hard to believe. Although, as you mentioned, he struggled a little bit in college. He's made some swing changes and, you know, his path is going to continue to go up though. And Cameron Hutt being at 156, you know, if they based it on a summer's work, I mean, he'd be ranked much higher because he had one of the best summers by an amateur, probably since Jordan Ebrugge in 2013 by winning the Ray Fisher the way he won it in a playoff and then winning the state open against the best players in the state. But, you know, he got to the fall and he admitted to me he was a little burned out, from a busy summer of playing high level golf and probably didn't play up to his standards or what we expected him in the fall. But now he's got the spring to put a stamp on his, career with the Badgers, coming up here.
The Badger women are 75 in the Division I rankings, and that's pretty solid. WIC champion UW-Whitewater, 36th in Division III. Wanted to highlight just a couple of individuals, too, Gary. Carly Carter of the Badgers has gone really from the back end of the lineup to number one this fall with UW. She comes in at number 263, so she's the top-ranked golfer individually in Division I. And then in Division III, WIAC champion Abby Filipiak of UW-Stout at number 54. But one I wanted to highlight is Paige Hillman out of Hudson. You know, she's had a well-traveled career at the college level, started out at the University of Sioux Falls, a Division II school, then transferred to Ball State for a year and really struggled to try to get that into the number five position with Ball State. And they parted ways and she wound up at St. Catharines in Minnesota, which, as I mentioned, has been a very, very good, program in the Minnesota Division III conference. And she comes in at 59, which, you know, I'm thinking if I'm Paige Hillman seeing these rankings, it kind of tells me at least for, you know, one day as they're released here, you know, at the midpoint of her third or fourth season that, you know, all my efforts have been worth it. It took a while to find the right fit, but, she's kind of settled in at the number two or three spot for one of the top Division III programs in the upper Midwest. And that's pretty neat. But, and then on the men's side, Jacob Hall of Osceola is the top ranked, Division III golfer with Wisconsin ties. He's at Bethel in Minnesota. He's 33. You know, we just had a signing day and there's, you know, a lot of kids that signed to go to play at scholarship schools. But, you know, these are two kids that are Division III schools from, you know, relatively small areas of the country, you know, Hudson, not the biggest community, and Osceola even smaller, although, you know, I think Osceola has had a pretty good record of turning out some pretty good golfers. So it is neat to see, you know, on paper, because with Golfstat, you got the top 100, and that was about it. And, they were names that you would see in U.S. amateurs and everything. I love the fact that you get to see here who's really good all the way down. I think UW Green Bay had a Ellie Frisch made the top 1100, and it may seem like a distant, you know, ranking, but you know, her teammates were all behind her and there were a lot of other golfers who all behind her. A lot of the women, I looked for other women from Wisconsin that are at other Division Ones and they weren't ahead of her. And so it really does speak to that. And you know, that depth of college golf. I mean, everyone's got a starting five, but they usually have 8 to 10 golfers in the program. It's a lot of golfers to rank. And then the one other thing I didn't get in the sweet spot, and I don't want to say this too loudly because I don't know if the Schmidtkeys listen to our podcast, Gary, but Mason is ranked ahead of Max. Mason played a handful of events at Marquette here in his first semester as a freshman, and Max is in his fifth year out at South Dakota. Max playing the number one spot out there. And like I said, Mason, you know, fighting to get the number five, yet is ranked ahead. It just, again, you know, you find your opportunities and then you're challenged to make the most of them. And part of, I think, Max's ranking has to do with South Dakota's schedule. And that will always be a component, I think, in these rankings. But the analytics of this, Gary, are enough to really blow the mind.
Well, you did a good job shortening it and encapsulating it and explaining it to the reader. But I guess I didn't realize that under Golfstat, there were no rankings for Division II and III golfers. Is that right? Individuals?
There were, but it was capped. You know, there wasn't a second page. You couldn't go down.
Okay.
And then you often wondered, and this is the transparency thing is also, you know, very big because, so We posted links in this little blurb I did for the Sweet Spot to Mark Brody's explanation of the rankings, including a video. I've read where he's going to do a seminar, two seminars for college coaches virtually, and then he's also going to appear at the college the coaches convention here in a short period of time and explain it more. But they had it, but it just, you never knew, you know, you saw a lot of warm weather schools represented and you go, how does one from the Midwest? So seeing Eau Claire at 16 or 17 in Division III is, I think, a huge step in the right direction, in terms of representation from this area based on the elements that golfers around here face versus golfers in other parts. Another one that I didn't mention, Madison College, you know, they do the first year in NJCAA Division II, and we talked a couple weeks ago about, you know, how good the Wolfpack were. This fall, they're 21 in the rankings, which is a great, ranking for Glenn Eichstedt's program. And Jacob Brown, son of longtime section club pro Charlie Brown at number 42 and Deegan Riley at 45, were ranked in the top 50. So, you know, that's good stuff too. And I think what's important here, Gary, is it gives these programs, you know, and these coaches an opportunity to put stuff up on the bulletin board and say, hey, we're not that far behind, you know, this school or that school that we've seen. And, you know, this is what they did and this is where they're ranked. Maybe we can go chase that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, young golfers in high school, sophomores and juniors thinking about playing, hoping to play college golf can now look at these rankings and see some of the colleges they might not have considered are ranked fairly high, and that might sway a lot of people to go to consider a Madison College, for instance.
Yeah, and two ways to get where you might want to go. One is athletically, you spend a year or two at Madison College, you can transfer to a four-year school and then play out your eligibility, or they have the direct transfer to UW-Madison after 2 years and academically, and you can also get there if you feel like college golf isn't something that you want to pursue. Well, all good stuff, and especially a lot to chew on here over the wintertime. Baseball has its hot stove league. I guess we're going to have a bit of a hot stove league in college golf where people can sit and debate the rankings. And hopefully with, and credit to Mark Brody and these two companies that, even though none of us have heard of them, they're trying to get where everybody wants to go. And it looks like they're going to do some things here over the winter months when the college coaches aren't actually on the golf course coaching to try to, make this system even better. Talking.golf is sponsored by Old Fashioned Golf. Our friends at Old Fashioned Golf have Wisconsin-inspired golf apparel, and it's made right in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Their gear is extremely comfortable. Their designs allow you to show your love for the state of Wisconsin on and off the golf course. Check them out at oldfashionedgolf.com. Gary, I was going to bring this up even before you put it in the sweet spot. The PGA Tour making news over the weekend with a couple of items. First, Tiger Woods is getting back into competition at his Hero World Challenge. Your thoughts on one of golf's greatest golfers testing the leg again? I guess that's what we're going to find out. How is really, I think, probably his longest stint away from golf since he tried to come back. And we saw him walking with his son, Charlie, who won, was on a state championship winning team in Florida. He's caddied for Charlie in a couple of events down there. What's your take on Tiger coming back?
Well, I just can't wait. I can't wait to see what he's done. I'm sure he's put in hours of practice, not as many as he once did because his injuries won't let him do that anymore. But if he's going to tee up an event, he believes at least that he's ready. So the whole world, I think, the whole golf world is kind of holding its breath and seeing what we're going to see from, waiting to see what we're going to see from Tiger Woods, what his level of competitive level is. Even though it's not a PGA Tour, full field big event, it'll be a barometer of where he is and where he's going, I think.
And it's a 20-man field coming. Is that down in the? Yeah, it's down in the Bahamas. I think one story that came out over the weekend that maybe didn't get a whole lot of attention, other than the conspiracy theorists on social media, Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele withdrew from the event. And they're replaced by Justin Rose and Lucas Glover. I hate reading too much into people withdrawing from events at this time of year. But are you at all going to get sucked into the drama that might be there behind the scenes?
A little bit. Those guys are pretty tight. They sort of march to the beat of their own drummer. Right now I'm reading, Live and Let Die, but Alan Shipnuck's book, on Live, and it's really, it's a great book. I mean, I would highly advise people who don't understand what went on behind the scenes and how that all happened. It's a great book. Not saying that those guys are going to jump, but it's interesting that they withdrew from the Hero.
Well, we still don't know how that marriage is going to work, if there is going to be one between the PGA Tour and Live Golf. But
right.
it does bring to an end, and we'll talk about our things we're thankful for in 2023. I'm not sure Live Golf will take the and that whole drama will make our list, but it certainly is move the needle and move the purses and the structure of the PGA Tour in a direction that we've never seen before. Also going in a different direction, NBC with their lead golf analyst, Paul Azinger. This was somewhat of a surprise to me.
Me too.
And not knowing when contracts are ever up. Zinger's been kind of the guy since Johnny Miller retired, but I can't say that I'd put Zinger in my, top two or three guys, sitting next to the play-by-play guys in the booth, but he certainly had an opinion and he knew his stuff.
He did. Yeah, that was a little bit of a big surprise to me, actually. And it leads me to wonder who's going to replace Azinger now in that lead position with NBC. I haven't heard any names bandied about. I don't know if you have, but I agree with you about Zinger. I thought he was really good. Maybe not the best that I've ever heard as a lead analyst, but pretty solid and knew his stuff and was not afraid to share opinions. And I think that's really important for a guy who sits in that seat as Johnny Miller proved over so many years.
Well, if I had to go with somebody, if they're really going for another Johnny Miller type, I think you'd be foolish not to consider Brandel Chambly. I mean, the guy's polarizing. He's opinionated. He's informed. I have to think, just based on watching him here in the last few months, that he's been a good foot soldier for NBC Golf Channel. I mean, he was providing commentary at the LPGA finale this weekend and has not been bashful about doing that and putting himself out there, having a male commentate and provide opinions on women's golf when that a good chunk of his summer is really focused in on, the major championships on the men's side. I think he's perfect for the job, but at the same time, are there more polished and, are there guys who, might fit more the Trevor Immelman mode where it's, he's got great insights, but doesn't quite have maybe the baggage that Brandel would have in terms of, and not baggage, but, people's opinions. I mean, for every, two or three people that like him, you might have one or two that don't. Is that enough to keep him out of that chair? I don't think it should, but he'd be a guy that I think would provide the same kind of, intrigue for listeners that Johnny Miller did.
Well, like him or not, Brandel knows his stuff. I mean, the guy does a ton of research. I'm sure he has people helping with some of his research, but he's extremely well informed, and very few people, I think, in the world know golf the way Brandel Chambly knows it. So you're right, Rob. That would be, I don't know if it's an obvious choice, but in my mind, it would be a great choice. I would love to listen to him in that lead analyst chair at NBC and see what he says at some of these tournaments.
Otherwise, I mean, Paul McGinley has been great on the live from sets, but I know he does a lot of stuff with Sky Sports, and obviously his passion is rooted overseas. I always thought Frank Nabilo did really well. I've really liked Justin Leonard, but now he's playing PGA Tour champions. Same with David Duval. Those guys I thought had great insights and weren't afraid to, kind of tell it like it is. So it'll be interesting. The other part that I found a little bit alarming, I think it was Golf Digest and following up on Doug Ferguson's report. Doug was the one who from Associated Press who broke the Azinger story, thinks that there might be more changes coming at Golf Channel. We've seen a lot of changes to Golf Channel, Gary. I don't know if I can stomach a lot more.
Yeah, a lot of good people have lost their jobs at Golf Channel. They've had quite a bit of contraction in recent years, or last year or two anyway. And I love the setup they have right now. The question, too, is, if Brandel Chambly does become the lead analyst at NBC, who fills that seat?
Yeah.
There's a lot going on behind the scenes in TV land right now, Rob.
Yeah, there sure is. So we'll continue to follow that story. We also should mention that our ranking series, the high school class-by-class rankings, will start this week. I wrote a column, Gary, today about the evolution of junior golf to a degree. I went back. I remember writing about I'm sure I got the release probably from Tony Coleman when he was the head of the WPGA, saying that we're going to do it. And I believe it was Dennis Tiziani and the club pros in Madison were behind trying to get some junior golf tournaments started through the umbrella of the WPGA. And that year they had five stops. I believe it was three of them were Portage was the first one, Portage Country Club, Reedsburg Country Club, Lake Wisconsin Country Club, and then two others. But back then, I've got this book here. You remember this, the Wisconsin Champions. Gene Haas would put this together. And it would list the players of the year. You can find it. You can find this information for, today's golfers online. But I'm looking here at the junior boys player of the year in 1987, the year before I believe this started. And there was points given in 88 for a junior tour. So I'll have to look at that. But anyway, Billy Himes, totals, he was national runner up at the apparently at the U.S. Junior. And so he got 250 points for that, which almost made him untouchable. He made the cut at the state open. Guys still get the, and gals get the, credit for that. He was the state high school champion, one of three times he did that, 100 points. WPGA junior, second place, got 150 points. Western junior, first place, it says here, 15 points. That seems a little bit low. The Golf Foundation Wisconsin Invitational, which is now the Lake Arrowhead Invitational, 75 points. And the Great Lakes Buick, second place tie. I think that was an AJGA event back then. And 75 points. Nothing for anything on a junior tour. Nothing for, the Dells. There was no Dells Junior Golf Invitational. There was no Mike Schnarr, no Sherry Steinhauer. A few guys, obviously the Junior Masters was there. But, nothing, back then that really, took junior golfers here, there, and everywhere. And now you've got, you've got the WPGA with their junior tour and then a lot of different governing bodies that do this on a regular basis. And then, you've got, the regional tours, the Hurricane Tour and, the Notabagay Tour, the AJGA Tour is still a national tour, but they have all these entities have regional events. But the one that's really kind of made the rankings complicated are the kids that we've seen leave Wisconsin for IMG, the Sports Academy in Florida. And last year we admitted Cody Getzky, former drive chip and putt national finalist. And he's one of four kids that are at IMG. And what made it tough is, he came back this year, played in a few things, I think the U.S. Junior Am qualifier, and then the State Open and State Am qualifiers, missed, I think, the State Am, missed the first time at State Open, but then was a co-medalist at the Last Chance qualifier for the State Open, goes to Century World and makes the cut. Very few people that are 15 years old, Gary D'Amato, as you know, make the cut in the State Open. And normally that would put him, but he's got no head-to-head competition against kids his age, and that's how we devise these rankings. So I've made the decision to put the IMG kids at number five. They're going to get their attention from the college coaches because that's part of the package at IMG. I'm trying to think. I looked it up. It's like $90,000 a year to go there. Man, I tell you, it's become it is the wild, wild west in terms of kids, doing what they need to do to, if they're chasing the college golf dream and aiming really high. They kind of have to do what Cody Getzky and Jessica Geiser and the Dobbs sisters have done and kind of take matters in their own hands, right?
Yeah, I think so, Rob, and I feel for you in compiling those rankings because how do you compare someone who obviously is very talented and has done some really good things but hasn't competed against against peers in our own state, and how do you rank them in a state ranking? It's not easy to do, Rob. I don't envy you for that, but I think the system you came up with is really fair. They're going to get noticed, based on what they do at IMG Academy, maybe not so much what they do against other kids in the state of Wisconsin, but, it's hard. Your ranking is very, very fair though. And, I know people really appreciate what you do to rank the kids in our state.
Well, we had a lot of kids in those previous rankings that signed national letters of intent and have made decisions to play college golf. I think last year, the girls' side of the 2023 list was as deep with kids going on to play college golf as we've seen. And whether you're going on to play college golf or whether you're finding yourself a fun college to go enjoy the best 4 years, 5 years of your life, there are no wrong decisions if it's the decision you want to make. And I think that's also very important to point out. Gary, as we wrap up Talking.Golf, it's Thanksgiving week here. I got to ask, 2023, we've covered a lot of things in golf in Wisconsin. What are you most thankful for in terms of either the people providing the opportunities or the tournaments that you covered? It's been a pretty cool year the last 12 months.
Not only cool year, Rob, but cool 5 years for me since I left the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and came to join you at Killarney Golf Media and writing for Wisconsin Golf. I'm just thankful. I'm thankful for this job. I mean, I'm covering the sport I love, the sport that I love to write about. And I, you know, although I'm getting older, Rob, I still have relatively good health. So hopefully we'll keep doing this for a while. But I'm just thankful for the opportunity that I've had here. And some of the great golf I've seen over the last 5 years from some of the best players that have come out of Wisconsin in a long time. How about you? What do you think?
I would echo that. I would also, I'm thankful for the tremendous support that we get when we're out covering tournaments and, or anytime we reach out to anybody for, you know, comments. I've been doing a lot of texting and emailing with kids for these rankings and making sure to copy their parents too, because I know that, you know, kids this time of year are busy with school and, you know, everyone that gets back to me, you know, really appreciative of what we do and the attention that we pay, to a sport that is getting less and less of it from our, you know, friends in the TV and print media. Because of really, you know, much like the Golf Channel, as they continue to downsize, it becomes tougher to really get, all bases covered. So. Thankful, you know, that we get the support that we get, and I know that that'll be really, really important as we go forward with Wisconsin.Golf. But as far as 2023 goes, I guess, you know, so many people to be thankful for, but a couple that come to mind, Century Insurance and Century World, because they provided us with a couple great coverage opportunities this year. Obviously, a once in a rare amount of time opportunity to cover U.S. Senior Open, second one in Wisconsin, the other one at Whistling Straits, you know, as Kohler was getting into the championship business. But that was a fun week up at Century World, and Century does things the right way. And then, of course, you know, they could have backed out of their commitment to the State Open, but provided us a great, great State Open that Cameron Huss won. So that was pretty cool. Also thankful to a lot of the players, you know, at all levels. Jerry Kelly, I you know, touched base with last week, and he's been a great supporter. But I think as you look at 2023, you really have to be thankful for the example that the Stricker family set as far as what golf means to them. You had, you know, Steve with, you know, an incredible historic year on the PGA Tour champions, but he also found time to, you know, caddy for Bobby at LPGA Q School in the first stage. Follow Izzy as she repeated as, you know, state high school champion, you know, be there, you know, to console her for not winning the team championship, but then congratulate her for repeating as an individual champion. That's what parents do. And then as a husband to Nikki, supporting Nikki's, you know, venture, getting back into competitive golf and qualifying for the U.S. Senior Women's Amateur. I could tell that it was a thrill beyond words for Nikki to be able to do that, but you don't do that if all the pieces of the puzzle at home aren't in place. And Steve and Nikki have done a wonderful job of doing that. And then, of course, you know, the work they do with American Family Insurance and the AmFam Championship, you know, I think, you know, goes without saying. It's really a, you know, I'm sure it's a labor of love for them, but it's also another thing on their plate. And these days that plate's been pretty full, but you got to be thankful for families like that, that set an example about, you know, what golf can be in the framework of somebody's calendar year. And their calendar year was quite busy with a lot of golf.
Yeah, that's really well said. And you make a good point about the support we get throughout the state. And in the last week, I've talked to Jack Schultz, Cameron Huss, and a couple other guys. Talked to Rocky Spurka the other day, who's the WFGA Senior Player of the Year. That'll be a story that we'll run in a few days here. And all of them expressed gratitude for what we do And it's just great to have that support. It's just nice to know you can pick up the phone or send out a text, and that almost virtually everyone in the state is going to respond to us and almost always favorably and positive. So we have a lot to be thankful for, Rob.
Yeah. And the community that's developed, both, with the help of Wisconsin.golf and around what we do is pretty cool too. I always get a smile when I see college golfers from Wisconsin on different teams that take the time to pose for pictures at tournaments where they happen to be playing together. And, I think the last one was Rachel Coughlin and Grace Suter maybe at a tournament late in the college season. And, it's always cool when people recognize that there's another Wisconsin name that we've seen either on the website or on the leaderboards at tournaments. So we will, embrace that as we go into the Thanksgiving week here. We hope everybody has a great Thanksgiving holiday. This Talking.Golf will bridge the gap, over the holiday week here. And then, we'll circle back at the end of the first week of December and have another installment of Talking.Golf. Gary, appreciate the time, and we'll talk to you very, very soon.
All right. Thanks, Rob. Take care.
Talking.Golf, sponsored by Old Fashioned Golf. Our friends at Old Fashioned Golf are creating Wisconsin-inspired golf apparel right in Green Bay, Wisconsin. All their gear is extremely comfortable with one-of-a-kind designs that allow you to show your love for this great state both on and off the course. And take it from me, Rob Hernandez, and Gary D'Amato, when we wear our old-fashioned golf polos on the golf course or out to dinner, no one has to ask us where we're from or where we like to play our golf. It's all about Wisconsin at Old Fashioned Golf, so check them out at oldfashionedgolf.com. Don't forget, from now until Black Friday, you spend $50 on oldfashionedgolf.com, and you get a free Wisconsin-centric ball marker. So check them out at oldfashionedgolf.com. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk golf again next week.